Pro Paint Days are back at Lowe's, and MyLowe's Pro Rewards members can save even more with limited-time deals. Right now, buy one, get one half off select HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams Primer and Ceiling Paint. Plus, get free same-day delivery to your job site when you order by 2 p.m. Offer valid through 6/13, delivery by 8 p.m. Subject to driver availability. Additional terms apply. See Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery for details.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bridget.
And this
is Girls Next Level.
Hey guys, welcome back to Girls Next Level podcast. Today we have a special guest for you guys. We have Hunter Satterwhite. He was a chef at the mansion for about 12 years full-time and then continued to work there even longer part-time. And we knew him pretty well. He was always so fun and so amazing. He has a ton of stories for you guys about what went on behind the scenes in the kitchen and everything he observed. So we're excited to get to it. Let's get into it.
Okay. With all our guests, I always like to start like at the very beginning. So I'm just curious, were you from LA originally?
No, not at all. From the Virginia, North Carolina border, a little small town, a little small area called Lake Gaston.
What brought you to LA?
You know, it's funny. It's I'm going to try not to get long-winded. One of the other chefs that used to work in the kitchen is also from the same hometown. Okay. And we worked together in the same restaurant as teenagers in high school. He ended up at the Western Culinary Institute, where Chef Carter from the mansion had a relationship with some of the chef instructors there. He ended up doing an internship, and I came out to visit, and the rest is history. I pretty much never left. And that was, year 2000.
And then, so how old were you when you started the mansion?
Oh, gosh, I wasn't even legal to drink, actually. And I know, and how great is that? So I was 20 years old, my first party.
And wow.
It wasn't too long after I turned 21, but...
First, I want to know, when you started, did they give you any rules, like the fraternization rule and like any of that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, you sign a non-disclosure. And I mean, for the most part, I think it was adhered to. But honestly, I don't think I don't ever really remember any employees that I know of out of bounds. And if they were, it was a mutual decision between, say, a half guest or a girl and that employee. But otherwise, we didn't have a choice but to interact quite heavily. Especially when the first couple of seasons when you guys did Girls Next Door, right? So, just using it as an example. So there was a lot of interactions. But, it really was pretty positive and professional for the most part, now that I look back on it.
Well, you're 20 years old. You're working at the Playboy Mansion. Were there ever times that you were like, oh, my God, I have a crush on that girl or something? Or like,
Of course. I mean, pretty much like 99% of the girls that go through that. My current girlfriend, which I've been with for years now, she calls me a whore. And which is probably some truth to it, especially back in those days. And with no doubt. But there were sometimes a few girls that would go through where you just get stuck on, but yeah, I mean, I'll start blushing here and anytime.
Okay. So I know the kitchen is like a very busy place and somewhat dangerous. There's sharp objects, there's hot things, there's fire going. It's a commercial kitchen. But aside from like those dangers of a commercial kitchen in general, why do you think they were always, or maybe you don't know this, I think you do though, why do you think they were always so anti us being in there ever?
So ask me that one more time.
So we had like a rule sort of that we were not allowed in the kitchen.
Really?
You don't know. Yeah. It was really frowned upon. And sometimes I would use it as a cut through because it was easier for me to get out to my car sometimes.
Everybody did.
I know everybody did. But I would get the sometimes I get yelled at and sometimes I get the dirtiest looks. I was like, sorry, sorry, just cutting through. But I also was never allowed, or I should say rarely allowed. And if I did, it was very scheduled. Not allowed to come in and like cook our own things, or like I love to bake, like not allowed to come in and bake or anything like that.
Well, I mean, it was busy, right? I mean, it really was. It's exactly what you said. It's a commercial kitchen with a full operation. You know, not to jump around, but our biggest duties of the day was actually cooking for the staff. And that was anywhere between 50 and 75 people, 3 meals a day.
Wow.
So, it was quite busy. I mean, it's a residential neighborhood, so you can't have that many people going in and out of the gates. The neighbors were already up in arms with the activity at the mansion to begin with. So, you know, once the employees got there, they were fed 3 meals a day, and that's kind of kept things quiet from the gates opening and closing. But I had no idea of this rule. I mean, you guys always came through there. I never gave anybody dirty looks. In fact, I kind of liked you guys coming through there. You know, there might have been times at the parties when we were, like the big parties, when we were busy, and might give you all a dirty look if you come through. And oftentimes, maybe with a buzz from drinking and getting in the way. And but generally speaking, I think it was pretty friendly. Everybody came through the kitchen. Everybody. It's just like at any home or any party, everybody hangs out in the kitchen. Exactly. And that was staff. I mean, Hef even used to come in once in a blue moon and stare at the cake refrigerator, you know, or make a decision. He used to come in and get his own cookie and maybe getting away from people sometimes. I don't know. But as far as you girls cooking, I think you probably could have come in there whenever you wanted. I do remember when you guys did cook stuff, maybe towards the holidays, wanted to make a gingerbread house or something. It was always late at night with like Melcher or Roman or Gabe or whoever was working the third shift for sure.
Our listeners are obsessed with the food at the mansion.
Yes.
And like every time we talk about, oh, yeah, so we were at buffet dinner, they're like, but what was on the buffet? And like just like, or like we'll be like, oh, and it was Thanksgiving and, you know, we had a buffet line. What was on it? What was served at the parties? But I wanted to ask about the regular stuff that's always on hand first, like the cookie drawer and the cake.
Yum. Did Trisha Frick have her own cookie?
We have so many questions.
Who's Trisha Frick?
Who's Trisha?
She was a girlfriend after we left. I only ask because I'm fascinated with like the cookie drawers, which you can see those on MTV Cribs. But I was wishing I had taken my own photo of the cookie drawers because we were just describing it to people and people wanted to see. So I looked online and it turns out like a food blogger had like gone to the mansion and written a piece, and she had taken a photo of the cookie drawers like after we left. And then there was, you know how Hef had that one tray of cookies that was like H&M only? And then there was a tray that said, Trish only. And I'm like, what were her cookies?
I don't know. See, when you girls left, that's the time when I wasn't there full time.
Okay.
So the latter years, I would basically just go there for the fun of it and for parties and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hef's cookies were number one. They were always there. And, you know, girls may have tried to come in and take over little things like that, but they were never successful. How about that?
Yeah.
And but then, of course, remember the cake case?
That's
always had the
question.
Chocolate cake in there. And what else did we keep in there? We kept the carrot cake, chocolate cake.
Wait.
Okay.
Don't move from the chocolate cake because I have the burning question of the whole podcast, the whole podcast series. What was the secret ingredient in the HMH chocolate cake?
It might have to stay a secret.
No.
Can you just
blink twice if I'm right? Was it Crisco?
No. If I told you, it would almost be disappointing.
Mayonnaise.
I kind of don't want people to know.
Mayonnaise.
There were definitely a handful of secrets, even with like, I'll tell you what. All right. Let's go back to the cookies real quick. The lemon cookie was actually made from a box of Duncan Hines lemon cake mix.
Mm-hmm.
And was like jazzed up in a way. I know. And that's how the cookie came out. So I might be hinting that that chocolate cake was just that simple.
Oh, no.
We know it was Duncan Hines.
Oh, okay.
Lori telling me that like the secret ingredient, instead of using the oil, she used Crisco. Is that right?
That could be right. Yeah. Okay.
But I'm also interested in the icing recipe, too, if anybody has that, because that was really good.
You can go get it yourself. It was that simple.
Oh, I wonder what brand it was. Because there's a brand. Yeah, because I don't like the Pillsbury can ones. It has a gross aftertaste.
Oh, yeah.
But I bet Duncan Hines, yeah, I thought that's what the cake mix was.
And I think it was the milk chocolate, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I don't want listeners to get disappointed. We didn't use, very few things were like store-bought, box-ready things. That was one of the few that was. Most everything was pretty much homemade, but there definitely was a few things that were store-bought. And honestly, it wasn't like our decision or us cutting corners. But you have to remember, it was actually a Hef's mom. Mm-hmm. So Hef's, you know, being from the Midwest, like all of the meals that we made for him and all the cakes and all of that is literally goes back to like his mom, how she cooked. And if you go back to that era, like, you know, that was even before microwaves became a big thing, right? And, you know, that's around that era is when women were going to convenient items and like Duncan Hines and products like that were in the grocery store shelves, right? But that chocolate cake always had to be there. And honestly, I don't remember him eating. I mean, Holly, how many times do you ever see him eat that chocolate cake?
Not too often. He was more like the strawberry ice cream cone was his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the oatmeal cookie.
I recall him coming in the kitchen maybe twice ever and to get a piece of that cake in all the years. I don't know, it's just pretty rare. A lot of times, I hate to say it, but that cake ended up going to the permanent filing cabinet.
Or my belly.
Yeah, or not.
I was into the cake.
It was a hangover specialty for me, too. I would get a box of orange juice and eat a slice of that cake. if I was to come in hungover, which happened maybe once in a while, and it's just like a sugar rush and a vitamin C kick, and it worked. So there's a secret to the listeners.
Okay, let's talk about Hef's menu, because like you just mentioned, he definitely had particular eating habits and things that he ordered.
Yep. I mean, there was a book and I may have a copy of it. And it was essentially just a binder, an inch and a half thick, with just his dishes in it. I believe there's a picture in each one of the pages, and it's not something I had to open often. There was only a handful of people that could cook for Hef. Out of all the chefs, Roman, of course, is one of them. That's probably who cooked for him the most. But Hef kind of, I mean, from what I saw, he ate, let's go backwards. At dinner, he kind of ate some of the same things all the time, but he would change it up and surprise you sometimes. You know, but again, very Midwestern food, even kind of mixed a little Southern, fried pork chops, you know, fried chicken, things of that nature. But, you know, Hef was a creature of habit. He ate the exact same thing every day. For breakfast and lunch, right? Breakfast would be anywhere between like 10 and noon. Lunch would be anywhere between like 4 and 6. And dinner would be, depending if you guys went out or not, anywhere from like 10 to 1 a.m. But same thing for breakfast and lunch, for sure. And for years, you guys actually ate the same things too. I mean, Holly, with that half a grapefruit. I mean, you guys kind of ate the same thing quite often.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
With any Mint mobile plan, and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/next level. That's mintmobile.com/next level. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/next level. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Bryant reminded me that at one point I made my own menu like Hef's because I would order like maybe 10 different things, but I'd be very specific about the sauces and stuff. So I just thought it was easier to have a binder down there so I could go number two. And then,
That was more for the butlers to refer to. And in fact, the Hef's binder was more for the butlers to refer to as well, because it even had a picture of how his tray should be set up, where the milk should be placed, the applesauce. And have you guys ever told the listeners like what Hef did eat every day for breakfast and lunch?
Tell them. We mentioned some of it, but not fully. So you should tell them.
I mean, it was the exact same thing. So English muffin, basically a Thomas's English muffin, toasted with promise. And before my time, he may have used real butter, but I don't know how the promise, you know, like the fake, like better for your heart butter came into the picture. And then lunch was an ice cold milk. They kept like these like tumbler glasses, I think you call them, in the freezer. And it was every meal always had ice cold milk. And I mean, literally it would be like half frozen on the top when it hit the glass. But lunch was bowl of applesauce, a block of Philadelphia cream cheese. Like when I say a block, like a 1-inch by 1-inch like cut, salt, no salt saltine crackers. And Lipton packet chicken noodle soup. And again, that is one of those things that came from probably his childhood. And then, let's see, that was it for lunch, right? Yeah, and that's it. Oh, and the turkey bacon. All of y'all got him started on that. Go back to breakfast. Once in a while, he would order turkey bacon, which by the way, is so disgusting. I don't know how in the hell. By the way, can I cuss? Can you cuss on this? I don't know how the fuck you guys eat that turkey bacon. It was disgusting. Oh. For all these years, every time I made the turkey bacon, I'm like, I don't understand how they can eat it. It smelled bad. It looked bad. The texture is terrible. And all of you ate it. I never could understand that. Somebody explain to me the turkey bacon.
I can explain to you, at least from me. So bacon, I always say I'm allergic to bacon. I'm not really allergic to it, but it gives me like a really like extreme weird acid reflux. So that's why I eat turkey bacon. But Hef likes normal bacon, but I think he caught on to the turkey bacon too, because he is allergic to bacon to the point where like he would always order like breakfast for dinner a lot of nights. Yep. He'd eat the bacon, and I shit you not, he would start like gagging and choking, and he'd run to the bathroom and get a full bottle of liquid Benadryl and start downing it. And I'm sitting there like, stop eating the bacon. This isn't worth it.
It's got to be from the nitrates or something.
Yeah.
It's got to be from like sodium nitrate or whatnot, because we had good bacon.
But there was some gross things that Hef ordered, or at least I think they're gross. I used to hate when I would go in to say goodnight and he had just ordered and was like eating this plate of mashed potatoes. And in the middle was like a dipped out hole with a runny egg oozing out of it. And I was just like,
and it's not disgusting. That's delicious. It's actually perfect comfort food or hangover food. And it's funny that you mention it, because I was going to mention it if you didn't. That's exactly what it was. Mashed potatoes, and you make the volcano in it as if you're going to put gravy. And it was a poached egg, right? A poached egg in it. Okay. And then Lasur, the silver can of Lasur peas, like the expensive canned peas on the side. It's actually delicious. I've made that for people before, especially hungover, and it works. You know, it's just a big thing of starch.
Okay, please don't ever make that for me.
Oh, it's actually not bad.
Unless you're trying to induce me to throw up.
It's delicious. I guess you have to really like eggs too, though. Potato chips, anytime that we would do. So classic Lay's potato chips. This is always fun to tell people. So we would keep family-sized bags there, right? Like not a normal bag, but family-sized. And anytime he ordered potato chips, we'd take a piece of parchment paper that fits like a full sheet pan, which is pretty big. For those that don't know, this is like baking pans that are in a commercial kitchen. And they're basically the size of like your normal home, like the top of your oven at home. It's basically like that full size, right? And so anyways, we put a piece of parchment on the table and we would open the potato chips from upside down because all the crumbs and stuff settle to the bottom. So open them upside down and then pour the whole bag out onto the counter and pick out the perfect potato chips for him. And he liked the ones that were folded, that would like, you know, fold into a U-shape and stick together. And but, you know, you had to put an assortment in there too of like the regular, and we were always looking for like the medium size flat ones. Like the ones that are too big, you know, if you had to break them, no bueno. And if they were broken, you wouldn't do it.
Well, what about the girlfriends? We talked a little bit about Holly's menu. I always had like, my favorite things were Ramon's chicken tacos. He did them so good. Yeah. And then I ordered this bean dip and he would make me homemade like tortilla chips to dip into it. The chicken Caesar salad, Olive Garden salad.
I was going to say, how can you not mention that. I mean, to the day, I have a hard time with Olive Garden salad. You guys wore that fucking salad out. That is skinny fries. Like, I hate McDonald's french fries because of you guys. And then it's not a bad thing, but it's like anytime I see a skinny fry, like there's a place that in Rhode Island where I get often I'm flying to, they have fish and chips, but their chips are like skinny fries. I won't eat them. I asked for something.
Oh, no.
And I think
you ruined it.
It's because you guys eat them every day, like nonstop.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably went through more skinny fries than any normal regular McDonald's would. It was insane.
You know what's funny is anytime we say skinny fries, people are like, give us the recipe. What's a skinny fry? Because they think it means like a low calorie, low fat fry. I'm like, no, they were just literally skinny, like not quite shoestring, but like a McDonald's size, like as opposed to like a steak fry. Do you remember the Sarah salad toward the end of our time there?
No, because I had, I left there full time and like, I can't remember, maybe like, I think in 07, I gave up my full-time benefits. So see, that would have been towards the end. But then I came back at the end of 08 a while when the economic apocalypse set in and people, you know, weren't hiring chefs on yachts there. All their yachts were chained to docks and stuff like that.
The hardship. My yacht was chained to a dock.
It's true. Exactly. In 2009, all the rich folks were like freaking out, you know, I call it the economic apocalypse. And I know, and you know, and poor me. So I was like, oh, I had to go back to the Playboy Mansion at work.
Yeah.
Oh, and you guys, you know what? Remember the Mo Muffin? Some of y'all would order that sometimes.
Yeah, the Mo Muffin.
Marilyn Gabowski.
Yeah. What was the Mo Muffin? Was it like an English muffin with tomato and cheese?
Tillamook, cheddar cheese, slice of tomato, toasted first, obviously, then put it back in there, melt the cheese, and that nasty ass turkey bacon. And I just don't get it. And to the day when I see turkey bacon, I always think of that skinny fries and an Olive Garden salad.
Were there any like attitudes from girls about like things not being cooked right or they didn't like it or anything like that?
No, every now and then this girl named Bridget would come in the kitchen and throw a fit.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
All the time.
No, not really. I think mostly, you know, folks have to remember this. There's only a handful of girls that live there, right? And that were true girlfriends or mostly people were coming in and out and or guests. Let's just use that word. They were guests. Maybe they were guests more often than not. But so generally, I think most people were very just thankful to be there and were just maybe so amazed at everything as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there might have been a few little attitudes to come in. You know, what I saw often, and it really wasn't in you guys or your group, but sometimes the girls would come through and when they first got there, they were so nice. And they were in just amazement. Oh, mm-hmm. I can't believe I'm here. Like, to pinch myself. And then, like, as the weeks or months progressed by, you could see the total change. They would totally become what I call LA-ified. Like, they would totally become Rodeo Drive-ified, right? These sweet little girls from the middle of nowhere, Ohio, you know, figured out fast that they can get away with everything because of their looks. And that was kind of rare, but it definitely happened. That was about the only attitudes I saw. But generally with the food, though, no, nobody really griped and moaned. And I think if anybody didn't like anything, they probably kept it quiet, to be honest, more than anything.
Yeah.
Were you there during the cum and the milk incident?
No, I don't even know about that one. Let's hear it. Now you got to tell me.
Well, Bridget came back to go to a Playboy Jazz Festival not long after we all moved out. And they were getting ready to go, like taking the picture in the Great Hall. And one of the Shannon twins came out and said to Hef, honey, there was cum in my milk. One of the butlers put cum in my milk. And Bridget, didn't somebody get fired over that allegation?
I can't remember. I can't remember.
That is crazy.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Stacey has a story that there's a butler that hated her, supposedly, and that he put dog food in her milkshake.
What's Stacey? Which one?
Stacey Burke.
Stacey was there all the time, right?
Yeah.
And I still follow her. I mean, I don't think anybody would do that. I would like to hope to not to think.
Yeah.
Well, and, she's amazing. I was asking about girls being attitude or whatever. So I just remember one person. And honestly, I don't even remember who the person was. I just remember seeing and hearing the attitude. But it was a girl that was testing and she was like pissed at the fruit she was given. She ordered like a fruit salad and it was melon. And she wanted berries, and they're so cheap. They won't even put like real berries in here. Like, I want blueberries and raspberries and stuff. And I got fucking melon.
Every who was time that?
I get melon.
Who was that? You remember?
Oh, just a girl testing. She was like so pissed.
She didn't make it though.
I don't
see. Usually, what I was saying earlier, usually they're really nice and friendly when they're testing. It's usually months later that I was speaking of when they become like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, where's my berry? It's like, you know, it's like, bitch, please. 6 weeks ago, you were in Ohio eating hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I feel so, like berries would be easier to wash up and throw in a bowl than cutting a melon.
Yeah. And I, you know, now I think about it. I don't think a lot of people, like I said, they kept quiet if they weren't happy. At least they didn't come into the kitchen and say anything to us. Because we really didn't take a lot of shit now that I think
about
it. Yeah. And like, we didn't have to, and Hef wouldn't allow it. You know, there were a couple of guests, like celebrities. One, for I can definitely remember Vern Troyer. Did I pronounce his name right? Mini-Me?
Yeah.
Dead now, RIP. I don't want to talk bad about the guy. He's dead. But he was a complete dick. And I remember he got backed up. Yeah, it was on a Sunday night buffet, but it was like a Sunday night when it was like a big movie premiere. So there was like 80, 100 people there, you know, more than a normal Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he was a complete dick to, I think, a chef and a butler. It might have been Lori was the chef. And I know it was the butler, and all they were doing was just cleaning up with the, like, empty glasses. It was in the Great Hall, like, the empty plates and glasses that were there. And, you know, he freaked out on him, and I do know that Hef, like, had words with him or had a security guard talk to him or something like that. And I don't think he ever came back up there after that, believe it or not.
Wow. So, the end of a long run.
Yeah, right, exactly. I do know that Hef definitely did not put up with people being mean to the staff.
Yeah,
that is a definite. And usually actually was Mary who would take care of it. He would tell Mary and then Mary would send the message down the chain. Right.
Yeah.
Definitely Mary. You don't want to fuck with Mary.
No way.
She, you know, she spit fire when she wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about each of the nights now that we're talking about that stuff. Monday night was manly night. What types of things did you guys have? And did that menu rotate?
Nope. Same shit every Monday for a thousand years.
What was it?
It was always meatloaf, always fried chicken, poached salmon with this yogurt dill sauce, and have like honey, whole grain mustard, you know, in this, you know, Greek yogurt. And I thought that was disgusting, but it was the same shit every Monday. And then what was on Tuesday night? Tuesday night was really nothing.
We're usually quiet at the mansion. We would have game night on Tuesday night. So we would order like junk food into the dining room, and we were playing, you know, dominoes with Hef or whatever.
Wednesday was
turkey night. Every Wednesday night, it was Thanksgiving dinner.
I feel like that request came from Hef's brother, Keith. Like, he was the one who really loved the turkey dinner, and that's why they did it on Wednesday.
It could have been. It could have been. But it was exactly what you said, though. A complete, full Thanksgiving meal. I mean, the turkey, the stuffing, the mashed potatoes and gravy, everything, even canned cranberry sauce, for sure.
It was funny. We just had Marston on, and because it was just Thanksgiving, we were talking about Thanksgiving food, and he was saying, you know, it's crazy because it's such a good meal and you only have it once a year. And I'm like, but you don't have to. You can have it once a week if you wanted.
Yeah.
I know. Did you not remind him? Every once a week you could get it at the mansion?
We did bring it up, but I don't think he was really around on card night enough to know, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about regular buffet nights, because people are like obsessed with those, but those menus. I know that there was fruit, there was a salad, there was a soup.
And those were my favorite nights right there. Now you're getting to the sweet spot. We've gotten all the other, some of that stuff out of the way. The Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, right? We could do whatever we wanted to. So, yes, I went to culinary school, but also wanted a real degree. So I went to a college where I got like a business degree along with it. But people are like, you know, oh, culinary school. No, you don't learn shit in culinary school except the basics. I learned to cook at the mansion on those Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. So, all right, not to jump around, but this is where I get excited. But we literally didn't have a budget typically, right? I mean, we could order anything. If we wanted to order, you know, $100 a pound lobster mushrooms, fine, go for it. You know, and within reason now. But we could do whatever we wanted. And we rotated in the kitchen. You know, for example, maybe I would get Friday night and I would write the menu a days ahead of time. We would order all the stuff. And then I would literally delegate out to everybody stuff to do. Okay, you do this. You make the salad dressing. You know, you're making the starch and so on and so on. And then the next night, somebody else would get a turn and they would delegate out what to do. And then same thing for Sunday. And that's how we did it. And, you know, and Chef Carter would always wanted us to have the menus submitted by like Tuesday or Wednesday-ish or something like that so we could get the stuff ordered. And but those were the fun times. And typically the staff would eat, you know, we would carry over. So like whatever that Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, the staff would kind of eat the same thing. And so those were good nights to be staff, to be there eating. And I mean, because we did some badass shit, you know, and we were doing shit before it was popular. Like, you know, in the past years, like braised, you know, short ribs all of a sudden are really popular, mainly because everybody like loves Korean food and whatnot. Like that's blown up on the scene. But we were doing shit like that years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that, like, and we were really ahead of our time sometimes doing stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, there was like a point in those sweet spot years of like, I call the sweet spot years, as far as the kitchen staff, like 03, 04, 05, 06, when, you know, there was a group of us chefs that I would have put up against anybody on this planet. So yeah, those are the fun nights. Oh, and then the desserts. Like that's when Lori was there doing desserts those years.
There was always like three different desserts. And it would be like pies or cheesecake or carrot cake, like all kinds of different things on there.
Yep.
And always the cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they came out later. Right. Mm-hmm. Didn't we bring out like a platter of cookies later in the evening?
Yeah.
The sandwiches.
There was the little tea sandwiches.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. Yes,
and
yes. I remember.
And the coffee.
A lot of the stuff I even forgot about.
Okay. Yeah. Fun in the Sun menus. Did you ever work on those?
Lots. Yes.
Because when we first were doing Fun in the Sun, they were really fancy. like hoity-toity.
Cold soups and stuff.
Yeah. And Holly and I had to like intervene a little bit and be like, can we get like pizza and like.
I remember clearly. I remember specifically like who was doing the fancy stuff too, because it was kind of like one person always working on it. And I remember them kind of being a little disappointed, a little pissed.
I felt it.
Yeah, he was definitely a little pissed. And but
that's probably the one giving me dirty looks.
mention his name just in case he's a listener.
Oh, no. Yeah, we just felt like because it was like mostly like college age girls coming to Fun in the Sun. And we really wanted to, because we were kind of trying to like revamp Fun in the Sun around this point. It wasn't more of like the sophisticated, older, hoity-toity audience for that day.
And I was fine with that, because when it came time for me to, you know, because we took turns doing Fun in the Sun, just like we took turns doing a menu for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. And so I was fine with it, because when it came back to my turn, I was like, well, fuck yeah. All I got to do is like chicken fingers and pizza. And now I can just go hide in the corner and smoke weed all day. It was wonderful. It really was.
Everybody's having fun in the sun.
No doubt. And it was.
Okay. Holidays.
Tell me about Easter. I don't remember the food. I just always got ice cream.
It was one of my favorites for sure, because first off, the staff. I don't know if you guys knew this. Yeah, I'm sure you guys know this. The staff, everybody. When I mean the staff, I mean the whole kit and caboodle. I'm talking gardeners, laundry, housekeeping. They would get eggs. We would order cases of eggs like a week and a half or more, 2 weeks ahead of time. And they would take all these eggs home, right? And if you like poke a hole on each end of the egg, you can blow the egg out, right? And they would take these shells and they would decorate them. Mm-hmm. And I think Hef paid like the staff, whoever did it, like extra money. But it was a cool activity. I mean, all these folks were, it was a way for them to make extra money. Mm-hmm. And because, by the way, we were paid shit there, if you want to get on that subject. At least us peons were. I don't know about the upper management. But it was so cool because, you know, what am I getting at? The staff take them home and like their kids and cousins and kids and. They would bring back, you know, they left with, you know, these flats of eggs and come back with these most gorgeous, like, decorative eggs. And I'm pretty sure that, Hank or whoever would go and hide them around the property. And then, of course, there were some eggs, like the fake eggs you put back together, the plastic ones. They had, like, money and little prizes and stuff on them. But
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learn to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Speaking of the holidays and stuff, you mentioned that a group of them would put together like tip money for you guys.
Yep.
Or like what do you call it? Like a Christmas gift.
Christmas bonus. Like, Christmas thank you, you know?
Yeah. And I think it was Thanksgiving and Christmas, they would have all the staff come into the dining room and everybody would give you guys like a standing ovation. And then later you would get the money. How did that make you feel? Like, were you proud or was that a bit awkward?
Oh, of course.
Or like,
Of course. I mean, you know, we worked our asses off for that. I mean, we worked our asses off all the time. And, you know, very appreciative of it. I mean, 1,000%. And but it was genuine. You could tell, because again, most of these have same old cronies, same buddies that were there all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so it was nice that they all pitched together and gave us something. And, you know, they were always so generous. And it was nice. And they would basically get evenly divided between all butlers and kitchen staff, whether you were working those specific holidays or not. You know, it would all get divvied up into envelopes and handed to us at some point in time. And
yeah. Speaking of working the holidays, was that tough, like being away from family and having to be at the mansion, or did it feel like family there?
Exactly. I was going to say no, because that was my family, you know, and it's, unless I went back home to Virginia, which I would do sometimes every few years, you know, to like, let's say be in LA and on those holidays and not be at the mansion would be unusual. That would be like not going over to your mom's, you know, for Christmas morning. I mean, it's true. So,
I mean, that's how it felt to me too. Like, it felt like having the staff there felt like family was there and everybody mm-hmm. was home, kind of. I know you guys were working, so it's not the same for you, but it felt like that to me. It felt very much like everybody's here, all the family's here. And I even felt that with the Girls Next Door crew when they had to film our holidays and stuff. I felt like everybody's home for the holidays.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, and you called it work, but honestly, I know it wasn't really hard. And the reason being, because it wasn't a lot of pressure. It was never really pressure. You know, the normal kitchen, you know, time crunches, you know, for big parties. And, you know, we'd set a goal, you know, like the big yeah. parties and getting the food out at a specific time. But otherwise, it really wasn't a lot of pressure there. You know, when like for any of these dinners or parties or anything, we had days and days in advance to prep for the stuff. So, you know, a typical, you know, hotel or restaurant is a lot of pressure, right? And this wasn't like that. And like you said, because you're working with, you know, and not just the staff, but the girls, everybody was family. So like Dan, I consider him my brother. It's like, you know, working with your family all day. So it's pretty cool.
What about smaller events when we would do like themed menus, like our pumpkin night or like our birthdays mm-hmm. or things like that? Did you guys like the creativity and the breaking out of the norm? Or were you guys like, oh my God, what are we making?
Pain in the ass. No, I'm joking. It really wasn't. I mean, most of it was really just putting logistics together what you guys wanted. Like, you know, you guys would send a list like, hey, we want this, this, that. Can you order it? And we'd get it ordered. And most of the time you guys did a lot of, well, it depends on what it was. But no, it wasn't that difficult. It was actually good because it was a change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as mentioned 1,000 times, it was pretty much the same shit all the time, Groundhog Day. So when occasions like this would come up, it was fun because it was just something different, you know?
Yeah, I know I did for my murder mystery party. I had like a whole like Asian themed cuisine. I know Holly did a whole French themed cuisine.
Yep.
When Dick Rosenzweig used to have his business lunches there, I would That's see right. the menus sometimes, and those were pretty damn fancy.
They were the fanciest that it got at the mansion for sure. And Jeff Scott, what I call those golden years that I mentioned earlier, he pretty much ran those, or did a majority of those throughout those years. And those lunches, RSR, we would call Rosenzweig, I learned a lot from those lunches, no doubt. Like that's when I said earlier, that's when I learned to cook. Like that's when I really learned to cook. It was definitely the fanciest that it ever got there were his lunches, but it was easier to do that because it would only be, you know, 2 to say 5 or 6 guests max.
Yeah.
So, and if that's small of a number, you could really go all out and, you know, take the time and, you know, do straight 5-star Michelin star stuff. And of course, whoever he was having the meeting for, he wanted to, you know, show off, you know, not only his position, but show off the staff and, you know, show off what he had and where he worked and stuff, right? But I don't blame him because what was he, like the second or third employee at Playboy? Something like that, right?
I don't even know, but he'd been there a long time.
Yeah, he started with F in 53 in Chicago.
He was an positive. OG. Yeah,
yep, you're right. A complete OG. Yeah.
Let's talk about the buffets for some of the bigger parties, because, I mean, Midsummers and stuff, I mean, it was just full-blown cheese, like, waterfalls out there. And
I was blown away when I first, I'd never seen a party like that when I first came, like, the crab leg buffet and the way it was all just so set out on the ice, so pretty. And then I was really sad to notice, because I was looking at pictures for something, I think I was looking for that specifically because we've talked about it on the podcast before. And the first thing that came up was the way the Mansion Buffet looked like after we left, when they really like started selling tickets to the party, and it was sad.
Oh,
I eventually found a picture of the OG, but yeah, it really changed over the years.
Yeah, the OG. And now that you say that, I want to make sure that the listeners understand. I'm talking about the years, like, say, before 2011, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. You know, after that, things like really changed. But the good years I consider were literally, say, year 2000 through, let's say, 2010, 11. And that decade was by far the best decade there. I mean, Hef had just gotten divorced from Kimberly, and he was ready to, you know, mingle and party again and make up for all those years. And that's what he did. And I mean, we had a blast, right? And the economy was good. The magazine was selling. You know, it was before the internet came and like raped, you know, the business and the company for what it's worth. So things are good. But yes, I haven't, you know, Holly said you remember you'd never seen a party like that. I haven't seen a party like that since. Those parties, especially Midsummer's My Dream. I mean, I don't even know what the bill was on the amount of seafood, but
yeah.
I don't think you could do it today because now king crab is like $30, $40 a pound. I'm certain it wasn't that costly back then.
Yeah.
But it was. It was shrimp, king crab, oysters galore. We would have like 2, 3, 4 people back there just shucking oysters all night. That's it.
Wow.
That's all they did. Just shucking oysters.
Imagine throwing a party and you have to hire 3 full people just to shuck the oysters. Like, that's crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, hours leading up to the party, there would be probably more than that. Sometimes maybe half a dozen of us just shucking oysters and, you know, stacking them. And then once, of course, the party got going, maybe it would dwindle down to 2, 3, 4 people. But there would at least be one person. Just that's all they did all night long was oysters.
Wow. That's crazy.
I know. It was nuts. And I look back on that and I'm like, you know, I just can't imagine the cost back then, but especially today. I mean, because all of that stuff has gone sky high in prices. But people took advantage of it, though. I remember you couldn't keep king crab on that ice. It would disappear quite rapidly.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
When the rental parties were, did they have like the same menus?
Oh, like the folks that would rent the mansion? No, they usually would choose. I think they basically have to choose from like a bunch of different items that were on like a list of menus. Once in a while, they would have like certain requests that maybe weren't on there. But typically for us, it was always kind of the same thing. But maybe for those parties, it was different.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those that are listening, I don't know if you guys have ever touched on this. You couldn't really just rent the mansion out. You had to have an inn and a really good reason. Like, you know, for example, Doers Liquor would do a party there every year, but they were big sponsors of the magazine. So it was easy to like, hey, Hef, you know, the sponsor of the magazine wants to rent a party, you know, rent the mansion, do a party, you know, or the golf tournament. That was always fun. But it was, for us, I swear, it was the same shit, man. It was always, you know, something on a stick, skewers, those mini crab cakes. And they're delicious, but God, I got so sick of those crab cakes, but I guess we all did. What else? Like chicken satay. We did lamb chops a lot. Lots of memories you guys are bringing back.
Okay, so what was your overall like sense of working there? I know you said very family and stuff, but if you could just sort of like sum up like what it felt like working at the Playboy Mansion.
I mean, it was amazing. And I knew it at the time. And there was a lot of days when those gates would open that you'd pinch yourself. And there's a lot of days those gates would open and you'd drag your ass up the driveway. And like, fuck, I don't want to do this today. You know, because it really did become like a job. And I tried to remind myself that to not take it for granted, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think I have appreciated Playboy a lot more in these latter years. Like now that I look back on it, or like, you know, today in this conversation, or when people ask me, and I really get into a mood and want to talk about it when people ask me, we really had a need. For me, Playboy is a gift that keeps on giving. Like everything I've done in life has somehow been a spinoff from Playboy. Like, you know, for example, like I knew that Playboy wouldn't go forever. And I realized that after, you know, being there 7, 8, 9 years full time, whatever. And so that's why I kind of started tinkering around with other ideas what I could do and how I ended up on yachts. But it was because of a security guard who was doing like a little moonlighting thing for another family in LA who had a yacht. How I ended up on yachts and traveling around the world, you know, and meeting my ex-wife. We had a blast for years doing that. And then, you know, I got into the carnival business, right? It's crazy. I know. Don't think carny. There's a lot of like normal people in this business. There's a lot of money to be made in it. And don't think food trucks. Think like food trailer. When it's set up, you don't even know it's a trailer. Think like LA mm-hmm. County Fair.
Yeah.
Big stuff. The big marquees, big lights, and
Carnival
Inn. Exactly. And I got into that business because of Julie McCullough. Her cousin owns a carnival. And my ex-wife and I went to visit her in Fort Lauderdale, where she had a condo. And that's like the yacht capital of the world. We were working on yachts. And she was like, oh, yeah, come on over. She's like, hey, my family's in town. They own this carnival. Come to the church where they're doing this fundraiser. And I'm going to be helping them. And I get there and I see the line at this funnel cake. And I'm like, and I'm thinking that this is like 10 cents in ingredients. And at the time they were charging like $5. This kitty cat back. Now, of course, it costs more. But and that's it. She introduced me to her cousin. And he's like, yeah, if you guys go buy something, I'll let you in. And that's how I ended up doing that. Like everything I've done is just completely bounced off of Playboy. Even me ended up being an airline pilot. Same thing. It bounced off of Playboy by knowing somebody. So, I mean, I know that's a very long-winded answer, but it really has been the gift that just keeps on giving.
When I was talking to you, you said that you have G-rated stories, PG-rated stories, R-rated stories, X-rated stories. Tell us some of the most crazy stories.
I mean, like I said at the very beginning when we started chatting, a lot of them don't even really involve girls. A couple of them do, and I will take those dearly with me, my friend, to I just wouldn't be right to discuss any of that stuff because, you know, you just can't kiss and tell everything, right? But the fun stories involved things like, and a guy's a buddy of mine today, Robert Jafari, Ferrari Enzo, right? I mean, really a long one, no matter story, but like I said, involved a car or Snoop Dogg. Right, escape into the outside kitchen, and I know we have to like paint this picture for everybody. We literally had an outside kitchen also where we would like execute these big parties and whatnot, and it was under this massive tree, and like this table was built around the tree, and like this kitchen was built around this this tree. The whole kitchen was literally, and it was right against the wall of like going out to the pool by the garage to the backyard. And I remember Snoop Dogg escaping like inside the kitchen. A lot of people used to just escape inside that kitchen, I think, at these big parties, especially celebrities, just to get away from folks for a minute, right? Because they're being pulled in several directions. Well, in this case, I think Snoop's bodyguard, I hope Snoop listens to this shit too. Mm-hmm. I know he won't remember this, but I think Snoop got so fucked up this one night. And I believe, you know, total weed and alcohol for sure. I know it was alcohol because you'll understand why in a minute. And so he comes in the back kitchen and his bodyguard's like, you know, trying to talk to him. And he's got like this big blunt in one hand and like a drink in the other. And at the door to go out to the backyard and to come into the kitchen, the door that separated the two, that is, I'm over talking this because I'm really trying to get people to visualize it. But on the inside of the kitchen, beside this door, we had a smoker, a small smoker. And by that smoker was the staircase that led downstairs to like the basement to the laundry room and like food storage and all this other stuff. And
the secret tunnels
that really don't exist.
Thank
or
you.
Or do they?
Or
I know. I'm gonna, not exactly. I'm gonna, I can help you with that. Do they or do they not? So, He just got so fucked up and he fell down the steps And when he hit the bottom of the steps, he was still holding his drink and still had the blunt, came to the top of the steps. And then me and a couple of other people, can't say their names. I don't want to throw them under the bus, started smoking the blunt with Snoop Dogg. Right now, these are the look back and pinch yourself moments. Seven of the Playboy Mansion is smoking a blunt with Snoop Dogg now. And then he turns around and just pukes all over the smoker. And his bodyguard's just looking at us, and we're like, oh my God. And so, you know, now one of the dishwashers is like filling a Cambro full of water. I think it was Juan, if you guys remember Juan.
Yes.
And it was like pouring it on the smoker. And, you know, I know it's not, this is like a PG story, right? We're going to keep it like that. I can't kiss and tell it all.
What were you guys working on when, like, there was no party? There was no, like, if there was on the rare quiet nights at the mansion?
Well, you know, I was saying earlier, it was literally, you know, Groundhog Day. It's the same shit every day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner for the staff. I mean, that's it. Nothing. We would be prepping towards whatever was coming next. So, you know, there was always a chef there 24/7, right? Always a butler, always a chef, and always security. 24/7, all the time. So during the day, there'd be several chefs there. And because it was busier, there was more staff. But then in the evening, you know, graveyard is only one chef. But then in the evening, it would dwindle down to just like two chefs, you know, because you've done all of the employee meals. And I know you keep hearing me say that, but really the staff meal was one of the biggest projects there on a daily basis.
Yeah, smell all the time.
Yeah,
so
it was nice.
Wasn't when, much downtime.
It really wasn't. But there, it was nice when it was quiet like that and we could casually prep at our convenience towards the weekends or towards the next party. It was really nice. It was just chill and quiet and, you know, you get your normal work done and, you know, and maybe sneak off and have a little toke somewhere hiding. Right? I can say this now because I'm not employed, right? And I mean, we did. We had our little hiding spots. I wouldn't even say hiding spots. We weren't really hiding, but it was kind of like get away from the world and, you know, go have a little smoke.
Yeah.
And those were the great nights when it was just quiet. I actually probably appreciated those times more than any of the others. You know, if you know, just walk around the grounds, let's say like 8, 9 o'clock on just a normal, quiet weekday and it's dark and, you know, a few little birds walking around like spotting something.
Yeah.
Place to sleep.
I know you talk about like the whole kitchen and staff and everything being family and everything, but were there any egos?
Of course. Are you kidding me? I mean, I think everybody had a little bit of an ego no matter what.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's no question. And, but not in a bad way. I mean, honestly, probably a little bit of ego to work there is a good thing. And, you know, I think that's maybe perhaps what made us all, you know, special shining stars, that to really like get the job done, perform something that's just not, that's very abnormal. You know, this is not a normal rich person's house or a normal celebrity's house. There's just nothing normal about it. So I think we all had to have a little bit of, you know, yeah, a little, even maybe even attitude, a little attitude and ego to do it, you know, because there were some pretty big personalities there, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Totally.
I just had a memory that I totally forgot about. I was in the pantry / kitchen area, like right in the doorway area there. And I was talking to the staff and everything. It was during a major party. I forget which one, maybe Midsummer's. And a previous playmate came in through the back of the kitchen and was like shouting out orders for food she wanted made and stuff.
Oh,
I mean, a
man.
Total bitch. And you guys, I don't know if you were there personally, but you guys were going to make it for her. And I like got in a shouting match with her about how rude she was and to get out and that she doesn't get to just like demand food to be made for her.
Yeah.
People live here. And she's like, I'm a playmate. I can have whatever I want. And like, I totally just remembered that. Like, cause I was thinking about the back door that like you were just describing the outdoor kitchen. Cause that's the way she came in from.
Yeah. I mean, bitches are bitches, Bridget. I mean, that's how it is. You can take the bitch out of the country, but you can't take the bitch out of the bitch or whatever the saying is.
Whatever the saying is.
I mean, it's some of the chefs, speaking of egos and attitudes, some of the guys would just whatever and start making it. But some of the guys, remember Stinkley, like, you know, Dan, in a very nice way, would be like, look at him and be like, go tell the butlers. Like, you know, go write a ticket up, bitch. Like, who are you? You know, And because I had to write a ticket up. That's one thing that listeners probably don't think of. But we kept track of everything that was served.
Yeah.
And because I think, you know, somehow like it was billed back to the company or HEF.
Yeah.
Like literally the company or HEF, it was like a billing system going on, which is smart, you know, because it really was a company. Yes, it was his house, but it was also very much a business for the company itself. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. And if anybody ever came through intoxicated, you know, we didn't really pay much attention to them. At least I didn't. And some of the guys probably try to take advantage of their intoxicated asses. But yeah, for the most part, though, we didn't have to deal with that shit too much. I mean, we really didn't. You know, and it was kind of easy to be like, you know, you don't really want to tell them to fuck off, but fuck off in a nice way.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Have a magical day.
And, you know, it's funny that now I'm starting to remember some memories. I can remember some of these attitudes. Typically, I'd be like, okay, I'll get right on that. You know, say it just like that. And then, and of course, never get on it, you know?
Yeah.
3 hours later. And typically, they would kind of get the message and get the hint. And maybe eventually go through the system and do it the proper way by telling a butler what they want, you know, and the butler would write it up and send a ticket. And anyways.
Yeah. So you go from working at the mansion to working on yachts. And like, I didn't even know about the carnival. And now you are a pilot. Well, you were actually you had your pilot's license before you even worked at the mansion, right?
That is exactly right. Yep. I got my pilot's license when I was in college. And sold weed to pay for that and grew up dirt poor. And, you know, and back in the day, now I'm really telling my age. Obviously, weed, you can like go get weed anywhere now. And it's like completely legal, right? But back then, not so much. So that's how I paid for my initial pilot's license. Because like my family, we didn't have a lot of money back then. In fact, I'm still, I think, the only person in my family to go to college. And so I always threatened to make it a career. Because the food industry is stressful. I've done everything you can do in the food industry. I mean, you just mentioned it. You know, I'm working with Playboy, other rich people, yachts, even the carnival business. I've owned brick and mortar restaurants as well. And finally, my dad died in 2017, and I had some brick and mortar restaurants of my own here in the States, as well as the ones in the Netherlands. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to end up right there with him if I don't stop. Because the food business, the restaurant business can... I mean, it's got to be one of the hardest industries. And I loved it, and I thrived on it, but it doesn't mean that it was great or healthy. So that was it. I sold everything and said, I'm going to make it a career. And the good thing is that flying pays now. And, you know, back in the day, flying didn't pay very much, believe it or not. Mm. And, you know, a new pilot, you're lucky if you made like 20 grand a year. And, wow. Which is crazy to think about now.
You are trusting these people.
Well,
it was so good catching up.
It was so good to see you again. Thank you so much for doing this.
Really a pleasure to come on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Eat something good.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you for joining us, guys. We're going to take 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's. We will be back on Monday, January 6th, and we will be talking about the episode Hearts of Fire, which is Girls Next Door, Season 3, Episode 7. It's all about Valentine's Day and Mardi Gras and sharing your boyfriend and all the fun things on the holidays. So I hope you guys have an amazing holiday season, no matter how you celebrate, and we'll see you guys in 3 weeks. Bye.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're here from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members, your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.